Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wefald. I'm president of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. The commission is meeting for its regular meeting today, October 24th, on the 12th floor of the Capitol Building in Bismarck, North Dakota. With me in person is Commissioner Tony Clark, and participating in the phone today, by phone today, is Commissioner Kevin Kramer. The commission is trying out a new sound system today, so bear with us if there's any difficulties, though we think everything's going to be going all right. We have quite a full agenda today. I have no particular welcoming comments other than welcome to everyone who's attending the meeting today. And Commissioner Clark?
Good morning. Welcome.
And the sound system sounds great through the phone. So good morning, everybody, and I move passage of items on the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, first we'll go to SW1. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, case number PU 400-92399.
Second.
Now, Xcel Energy anticipates filing a general electric rate increase this December. They have informed us of this via letter on September 11th of 2007. While they're doing preparation for filing a case for the commission, they identified several issues that they brought to the attention of our staff and are now bringing to the attention of the commission. In a previous order, which was issued back in 1993? The case actually started in 1992, but the issue order was issued in 1993, case PU 400-92399. Finding of fact in that case, number 11111, required that NSP conduct a compensation comparison of union wages and demonstrate to the commission that it's made efforts to bring its union wages in line with the rest of the industry. NSP contends that a comparison is not feasible because the information is not available, and there are legal restraints to acquiring that information. Also, finding of fact number 166 required that a long-term incremental class cost of service study be filed with Xcel's next rate application. NSP contends that conducting such a study is costly and no longer relevant. Now, the commission, because these were findings of fact in a previous order, needs to put these out for comment before we can make any decision about whether or not to accede to the request of NSP or to deny it. Those interested are invited to comment on this application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by November 27, 2007, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine these matters without a hearing. So what we're doing today is issuing a notice of opportunity for hearing for two issues that resulted from the 1993 rate case. That's the last electric rate case that was held by the commission with NSP. And now they're planning to file another case, and so we need to look at these findings and find out whether it's still appropriate to make those requirements that were in that previous order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
SW2. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $36,500 due upon filing of an application in case number PU 07722, Langdon Wind LLC's proposed wind farm expansion in Cavalier County, North Dakota.
Second.
Now, we all know and we're familiar with the Langdon Wind Farm. The commission did a siting and for 160 megawatts of wind, and we completed that in May of this year, and now Florida Power and Light is in the process of building that wind farm up near Langdon. Now, what is being requested today is that Langdon Wind is proposing that they would build an additional 27 wind turbine generators and associated facilities, contributing up to 40 megawatts of additional generating capability to the previous permitted 106, 159 megawatt Langdon wind farm. Now, this proposed project would be constructed on up to 3.5 square miles of leased private property, approximately 5 miles southeast of Langdon, as shown on a map which has been distributed. The estimated cost is $73 million. Langdon Wind hopes to begin construction in May of 2008 and projects an in-service date, if everything goes well, by December of 2008. Today, all we're doing is we are voting whether to acknowledge Langdon Wind's letter of intent and shorten the waiting period requiring a filing for filing a siting application and assessing a filing fee due upon filing of the application. So this is the very first step in this process, and people then should watch in a future meeting for the commission to notice a hearing on this matter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW3. I move the commission accept the Office of Surface Mining's 2007 Annual Evaluation Summary Report for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program.
Second.
I think we have a copy of this out, but I'm not sure. Jim, is there a copy available of the total report? I don't know if it's here in the hearing room, but if someone would like to see it, Jim Deutsch, our director of the AML division, can certainly provide one. We always go over the comments that are received by the Office of Surface Mining and their AML surface and their oversight report with our commission's work. And quite frankly, they've all been great reports. But I will say that even if the commission received a bad report card, we would share that with you as well, because this is an annual report that we share with you. These are some of a few quotes from the report this year. The state of North Dakota administers an excellent AML program in full compliance with their AMLR plan. Also, historically, North Dakota has done an excellent job of reclaiming the hazards of past mining. Projects that have been completed for 2 years or more are identical to the surrounding terrain and impossible to identify unless they are pointed out by someone who is familiar with the site prior to reclamation. I recommend that the commission accept OSM's 2007 oversight report. This is an excellent report that we've received again, and we welcome the public to take a look at the full report.
We'd share it, but it would be on a special Thanksgiving Day agenda. Aye.
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 All right, SW4. Today, the commission is reviewing the past year, which goes from September 1st of 2006 to August 31st of 2007. We're reporting the commission's consumer contacts. The commission in that year, from September 1st, 2006 to August 31st, 2007, the commission recorded 918 contacts with the public. Now, I always like to stress that these are the recorded 918 contacts. The commission does receive other contacts, and occasionally they're not reported in our public contact system just because our staff is busy or some irregularity, but we did record 918 contacts. Now, these are very important because the public acts as our eyes and ears among the industries that we regulate, and having a working relationship with the public is one of the most important aspects of our jobs as regulators. There were 120 contacts from people seeking assistance to prevent their utilities from being disconnected, an increase of 17 from last year's report. And in many cases involving pending disconnections, the commission staff is able to buy customers more time to pay their bills by negotiating a payment arrangement between the consumer and the company. The official report, there's two parts of it. These will go on our internet site as they have over the past several years. One is a report by company statistics, which company there have been more contacts about. And then there's also by concerns. The other report is listed by concern so that people can look at these on our website. And if they are planning to do business with one company, they may want to check the commission's website to see if there's been many contacts. I would like to stress that contacts do not always mean complaints. It can mean that there is a question from the customer about the company. It can mean that they have a comment about the company. It does not necessarily mean that there is a complaint. But But sometimes you can tell by looking. Not too many people call us, for example, about billing issues, and they would say, I love the way they're handling their billing issues, all right? So most of the time we would get on billing issues, it would probably be a complaint. So people can read through these and understand that, I think, pretty well. This takes a substantial amount of work to put this together, and I would like to thank Tom Rafferty, who worked on this year, and some of our computer staff as well, to put this whole report together. It is very helpful for the commission to take a complete look at contacts that are received for the year, because it gives us a very good overview of who's contacting the commission and what they're contacting about.
I also want to recognize Tom and thank you for the effort in putting these together. So one of the things that you'll notice, I think our data is probably better this year than we've had ever before, and it probably has to do with the way that we've decided to handle consumer complaints within the last year. We've had really consolidated those efforts in kind of tracking and following up on consumer complaints with Tom, since he's been brought on as consumer outreach specialist. Not that they weren't being handled before, they certainly will, as it were. It's just that we're now funneling them through one person, so there's a more systematic tracking of exactly how these are handled. So I certainly appreciate the fact that the data is probably better than it ever has been before. Speaking specifically about telecommunications, you'll notice that the top sort of jurisdiction that we continue to get calls about is the telecommunications sector. We received last year 507 calls regarding telecom companies, which are more than the other regulated utilities that we received calls about. About 140 of those involve cell phones, which is interesting because cell phones now make up a majority of the lines in the state, yet we receive far less complaints proportionally about wireless phones than we do about landlines. So still, it's kind of those traditional billing problems that seem to make up a big chunk of the telecom calls. On the positive side, though, you also notice that a large percentage of the telecom calls are related to Lifeline and LinkUp, which is an important program for low-income consumers to allow them to have better access to telecommunication services. And so to the extent we're getting those calls, it means that the word is getting out about Lifeline and LinkUp. They're asking about it, and hopefully makes it easier for them to stay connected. Separate from those calls that we received regarding telecom companies, we also received over 200 Zap the Gap survey forms, so we've still got folks who are out there making the effort to go out, fill those out, and it certainly helps the commission in our efforts to connect them with cell phone companies who may be willing to deploy more services.
Okay, moving on to SW5. These are our fuel cost adjustments that the commission announces each month. The first one is Otter Tail. This month's calculation include a refund of $1,408,370 for Midwest ISO Schedules 16 and 17 administrative costs, as agreed to in the settlement approved by the commission in case number PU05131. This month, the Otter Tail, the total average cost of fuel and purchased energy for billing during the month of October is 1.6, I'm looking for the right number here on my sheet, and I'm having trouble finding it because it doesn't seem to match what I'm showing on the graph below. Yes, but it doesn't match because you see this, the graph shows it's way above two. Let's just suffice to say that right this month's calculation does include this refund. It appears from the chart that the total cost of fuel this month is around 2.5 cents. Is that correct or not correct, Jerry Lee?
I didn't bring the chart in here with me.
Okay, all right. So that is subject to check. But the important thing is that these refunds are flowing through this fuel cost adjustment this month. That fuel cost that refund relates to the commission's case that was held this last summer, that we decided this last summer, PU05131. It reflects a refund in Schedules 16 and 17 for administrative costs related to the Midwest ISO from April of 2005 through the summer of 2007 those refunds are all being placed into this month's fuel cost adjustment. I do not want to mislead people. There's a possibility that Otter Tail is planning to recover these in a future rate case. They have the option of deferring these now with an intent to recover in a future rate case. So although people are seeing that refund at this time, Otter Tail has the opportunity to bring those costs back to the commission for us to consider in a future rate case. Okay, that is the one for Otter Tail. Now let's move ahead to NSP. NSP decreased its fuel cost adjustment by 0.6067 cents per kilowatt hour this month. The resulting fuel cost adjustment for October is 2.027 cents per kilowatt hour for NSP. And as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will decrease by 50 cents for bills rendered in the month of October. And for MDU, their resulting fuel cost adjustment for October is 1.155 cents per kilowatt hour. And as a result of the changes that took place this month, the electric bill for a typical MDU residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will increase by 38 cents for bills rendered in the month of October. I do not think I'm going to go back to the Otter Tail one and just tell you that as a result of the changes this month, the electric bill for an Otter Tail residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will decrease by $5.93 for bills rendered in the month of October. So you can see that $1.4 million refund is substantial, makes a substantial impact on all classes of customers for Otter Tail this month. That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
If we move to Commissioner Kramer, I think he's on the...
Oh, excuse me.
Kevin, do you have the paperwork?
Commissioner Kramer?
I do.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Because you weren't here, I moved to Commissioner Clark, but that wasn't fair. All right.
Casey, I move the commission extend to December 12, 2007, the time for designation of corridor and the route in TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LLC's application to construct a 30-inch crude petroleum pipeline in Cavalier to Sargent County's case number PU06421.
Second.
A couple of weeks ago at a special admin meeting, our staff requested an extension of time for this raw permit and corridor designation for a number of reasons, not least of which is this staff workload with at least three other pipeline sightings, at least one that I can think of that whose construction schedule is ahead of this one. There are a couple of transmission line sightings. We have a pandemic response plan that I know some of our PUD staff are working on, and on top of that, we have a discussion in admin relating to Judge Wall's recommendations as it relates to the late file information and how we're going to deal with that. And so we have a number of things that I think show more than just cause for delaying this. The interveners had no objection. The company had no objection as long as we could have a decision by November 21st. The actual date for a decision based on the six-month timeline in statute would be November 2nd. I don't know that we can have it done by November 21st, so what this motion is for an extension until December 12th. I think there's plenty of cause for doing so, and recommend that...
I have a question about this, Commissioner Kramer. I had read the comments from the TransCanada Keystone Pipeline, and they had said that they had no problem with the commission extending this to November 21st
without just cause.
But I'm wondering, do we need to have, if we're going to extend this to December 12th today, do we need to have the paperwork for just cause attached to this?
I don't know whether we do or we don't. The standard for just cause, as I understand it, is it's not all that high. And if we deem as a commission that there's just cause based on our workload and the time that staff needs, that's adequate for passing the motion.
The other question that I have is, I had talked briefly about this with Bill Binnick before the meeting, and he said that if the commission wished to extend this to November 21st at this time, we wouldn't need to worry about just cause, and that we would have the ability to again look at this before November 21st to determine if we needed another extension. So since there was no contention about November 21st, that would be a possibility for the commission to use that date right now, and then to determine if we needed more time as we moved forward. So,
that's a reasonable compromise, I suppose, and a response. Although I would have to say, and let me just say this: if we pass this motion as I just made it, and Mr. Clark seconded it for a December 12th extension, I don't know how the company would respond to that per se. But I would also admonish all of us to try and get it done as soon as possible. And I suspect that the admin discussion will help give some clarity to that. One of the things on admin as well, and scheduling, of course, is a work session to discuss the next steps. Of course, we received a motion yesterday from City Attorney Fargo as well that will have to at some point be discussed. So my hope would be when we get to the discussion or to the admin portion of scheduling a work session, that we can schedule that work session as soon as possible and do that. But personally, I don't have any concern about passing the December 12th deadline today. It's, you know, seeing how it plays out with the company. I don't see that the December 12th deadline should cause the company all that much concern. I read, of course, a couple of times their response to the December 12th issues. The largest concern seems to be that our actions ultimately will determine or will put in motion some landowners signing easements. I think they're, we still have about 25-26% of the landowners have not signed easements who are waiting for our decision, as well as, of course, other jurisdictions, federal and local, county, and state. So I do not see December 12th deadline as holding that progress up. They're looking at a May 2008 construction date. So
my
done the work, I don't think that should be a problem.
My concern is that in the letter we received on October 19, 2007, it said Keystone will not require the commission to show just cause for the extension as long as the extension does not extend beyond November 21, 2007. So therefore, it seems to me that if we are making a motion to extend it to December 12th, that we should include information on just cause and have that as an attachment and have made that determination at this time. So that's my only concern with this, is that I don't know that our paperwork is complete to be able to do an extension December 12th at this time. I would feel more comfortable doing one to November the 21st and then determining, because we do not need to show just cause as long as the extension does not extend beyond November 21st. And then if we need more time, which we certainly may need more time, then we could address that and have information on just cause that would accompany anything that would extend it beyond November 21st.
I just stated enough just cause that will be in the record supporting my motion, and that quite honestly, knowing that December 12th is the extension as opposed to, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, if we do November 21st, gives all parties better clarity in which to move forward on. And so, you know, I understand the concern, but I think today's minutes will reflect plenty of just cause. And if the company wants to dispute that, you know, that's certainly their right.
Yeah, I don't have any concern with extending it to December 12th. It's not a mandate that we go as that long. It gives us the flexibility, however, to give staff the time that they felt that they need to process a number of the issues that are up there. As far as the just cause, it's the commission that controls the process, and the just cause has to be proven to us, not to the company. So, you know, I suppose the company could come back and, you know, take to a court the notion that we haven't given enough just cause, but that would only delay the process more. So the importance is that I think Commissioner Kramer laid out fairly well. We do have good reasons. We've got a recorded meeting now that establishes those reasons for it. I will admit I was a little bit concerned with some of the language in the company's filing regarding just cause, indicating that somehow if the commission takes action, then they have the, they didn't use the word leverage, but it was all but, the ability to go to landowners who are holding out and might be waiting for this commission order to then negotiate with them. I was not comfortable with that particular rationale for having us wrap up sooner rather than later. I think there might be others, but that I did not particularly appreciate.
I'm going to vote no, not because I don't think that the date is, not because of any, because I was one who had talked about that date, December 12, 2007, but I just would like to have, I would like to have paperwork in front of me with just cause language before I would vote for this. So I'm going to be voting no today.
Aye.
Commissioner Kramer?
Aye.
Commissioner Riefel?
No. I suppose, and I could have made a substitute motion, but I didn't, for November the 21st, but that's...
All right. Your, you know, your wishes are well reflected.
Okay. And thank you.
I appreciate that. Okay. Casey, two. I move the commission assess a proposed penalty for notice of violation number 0702 issued to the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation at the Beulah Mine and schedule an informal conference in the matter.
Second.
Okay. A notice of violation was issued at Dakota Westmoreland in September for constructing a primary haul road without prior approval of the mine plan. And Dakota Westmoreland didn't submit a response to address the remedial measures required in the NLD and has requested an informal conference in the matter. And whenever an informal conference is requested by the company, we're required to propose a civil penalty to then schedule an informal conference on the NLD. So the Reclamation Division is recommending to us that we propose a penalty of $1,500 for the NLD, and then a informal conference has been scheduled for December 13, 2007 in the commission hearing room with your announcer, Alan Holker, who will be presiding over that.
All in favor?
Aye.
And KT3, I move the commission accept the Office of Surface Mining's 2007 evaluation report for the coal mining and reclamation regulatory program.
Second.
Well, just like the AML report and the Commissioner Wiesel talked about, the OSM's report on oversight report on coal regulatory program is equally glowing, and this seems to be an annual thing, and thank goodness we don't compensate Jim Deutsch and his staff for reports here because the state would go broke. The OSM oversight report reads pretty much the same every year. It continues to talk about the North Dakota program, not only adhering to state policies and the federal policies and whatnot. It highlights the good relationship between the reclamation staff, all of the parties, including landowners, environmental groups, the companies themselves. The report states that the PSC has a very good working relationship with the customers. The high-quality mine land reclamation is one of the most notable aspects of the North Dakota Coal Regulatory Program, and that is reflected in many of the excellence in surface mining reclamation awards that North Dakota mines have received. And it basically states, in quotes here, overall, North Dakota has an excellent coal regulatory program. Staff at the PSC continue to implement the program in a highly professional, cooperative, and fair manner. And I, for one, and I know my fellow commissioners, very much appreciate the fact that the staff in the reclamation division make us look so good every day. So thank you, Jim, and the entire staff, and congratulations on another wonderful report.
Yes. Thanks. Congratulations, both AML and Active Line.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Now that ends it. This is my portfolio.
Okay. Thank you very much, Commissioner Kramer. Now we'll move on to Commissioner Clark.
Item TC1, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on the application of Sagebrush Cellular, Inc. for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for receiving federal universal service support, case number PU07672. This is just a notice of opportunity for hearing, and in this particular case, we haven't heard an ETC application in a while. ETC is the designation that's granted certain telecommunications companies that allows them to receive federal universal service funds. We have currently in North Dakota three wireless ETCs, Altel, Verizon, and SRT. And this is an application by Sagebrush Cellular, which is out of Montana. They're proposing to, or they're requesting ETC designation for northwestern North Dakota, Divide, and Williams counties.
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07702, granting the request of Farmers Mill and Elevator, Hankinson, North Dakota, to discontinue business at Hankinson and Mantador. This particular facility is 717,000 bushels in Hankinson, 478,000 bushels in Mantador. The facilities have been sold to Wheaton Dumont Co-op Elevator. The obligations have been assumed by Wheaton Dumont, and we will be approving them for license at a motion in just a little bit.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07711, granting the request of Specialty Export Productions, Inc., Greenfield, Tennessee, to discontinue business at East Fairview, North Dakota, effective October 3rd, 2007. This deserves a little bit of a special explanation in that you may recall that Specialty Export, as a company, was declared to be insolvent in North Dakota for its Hatton and East Fairview operations. Especially by virtue of law, however, just because we have an insolvency, the license itself is not discontinued at that point. Specialty Export, while they've not been operating under their grain warehouse license, does continue to hold it. On October 3rd, Specialty Export on its own filed this request to discontinue business operations at the East Fairview facility and to relinquish their license. This is because the facility has been sold to another company, and we cannot get those folks up licensed to do business at that operation until Specialty Export actually relinquishes the license.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 TC4, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07712, granting the request of Lone Prairie Grain, Inc., Rugby, North Dakota, to discontinue business at Tunbridge, North Dakota, effective October 10th, 2007. We were notified that the grain warehouse bond issued to Lone Prairie Grain would be canceled on November 8th. Lone Prairie had until October 10th to file a new bond or proof that their present bond would remain in effect. On October 10th, the licensing division received a request to discontinue business from Lone Prairie Grain, which spurred this motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. TC5, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07685, granting the request of Safflower Technologies International, LLC, Sydney, Montana, to operate a 250,000 bushel grain warehouse at East Fairview, North Dakota, October 3rd, 2007.
Second.
This is the other end of that East Fairview operation.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 And TC6, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07706, granting the request of Wheaton Dumont Co-op Elevator of Wheaton, Minnesota, to operate as a facilities-based grain buyer at Hankinson, North Dakota, and Mantador, North Dakota.
Second.
So they're back up and running.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Okay. We always, at this time of year, seem to have a great number of license applications and et cetera to go through, and it's good to know what's happening out there in the grain elevator.
The other thing, and we'll have an update here, I think, probably within the next few weeks on the grain elevator side. As we were predicting, the amount of ground storage and the amount of capacity of licensed bushels in the state has just exploded this year, and it has to do, of course, with bumper yields, good crops, and the conversion of a lot of acres to corn. We'll have those numbers for you probably within a week or two, but it's significant.
All right, and Alana.
One other thing, Commissioner, if I could, I forgot to up front, but I want to make sure that the record reflects that I authorized Alana to sign my name to the orders today, my absence.
All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner Kramer. Now, if there are any questions from the people who are present, we'll be glad to entertain those questions.
Kevin, where are you and why are you absent?
I actually had a previous obligation at Concordia College this afternoon, and of course, this is a, you might have noticed, an out-of-cycle meeting. So when we rescheduled the meeting, I said, as long as they can do it by phone, but not rescheduled, we scheduled this one 3 weeks from the previous meeting. I said, as long as they can maintain my obligation at Concordia and do it by phone, I'll do that. So that's where I am today. Actually, right now, I'm just leaving Castleton.
So you're not hosting a radio show or anything?
No, I'm not doing that today.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
The December 12th date, why was that picked?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. Actually, I should explain that. And I noticed on that, and we're rescheduling our meeting, but December 12th would be the first scheduled, regularly scheduled meeting of the PFC in December. And so that was sort of the logic of December 12th. And now I notice that we are going to reschedule that meeting, but December 12th remains the new deadline.
And where does one get the language of just cause? I mean, what is the statutory timeline here for having to make a decision, or what is the statutory timeline here for a decision, and where is the language of just cause for extending that timeline?
Well, the statutory timeline is 6 months, and of course the commission that it keeps those applications to be complete on May 2nd. So the deadline as per the 6 months would be November 2nd of this year. Let's see, I'm just trying to find the...
Alana has her book, the North Dakota Century Code, in front of her, Kevin, if you want her to look this up.
Yeah, I have it here somewhere, too.
I mean, is there a dead...
It's 49-2208.
Is there a drop-dead date where you have to make a decision? Whether you have just cause or not?
It's a good question, but the fact of the matter is we have the deadline, but on the other hand, they can't begin construction without a permit. So I suppose the deadline is reason, and of course reason at some point gets challenged in a court, I suspect, if we become too unreasonable. So
all
I
right.
have to check them down. So.
Kevin, Alana's found the statute.
He's right. The next sentence, though, just says the failure of the commission to act within the time limits shall not operate to divest the commission of jurisdiction in any certification proceeding.
So there's nothing about just cause?
Oh, there is farther up.
Okay.
The time for designation of a site or corridor may be extended by the commission for just cause.
Okay. The could you tell me what... this is what Commissioner Clark said. Did you have the impression that the company wanted an earlier deadline so that they could use it to try to encourage people to sign over use of their property?
Well,
sooner?
According to their filed response, there are a number of landowners who are awaiting our decision before signing an easement. I guess if you take them at their word, that doesn't seem so unreasonable or unlikely. On the other hand, you know, we have had a little bit of history with this company, or at least with some of their land agents. We've heard from some landowners that they misrepresented, you know, the decision or misrepresented permits and whatnot. So, you know, it does cause one to be a little bit suspicious, but at the same time, you know, I understand that there would be landowners that would await our decision, and that makes some sense to me, that a landowner would await a decision by the body that has the expertise to determine ultimately whether this is a good law or not.
I'd be glad to read the paragraph from the letter from Keystone that they're relating to. It says, construction is scheduled to start in North Dakota in May of 2008. While Keystone has already obtained easements on approximately 73% of the tracts in North Dakota, a number of landowners are waiting for the PSC to make a decision pertaining to Keystone's pending application. Until a PCNN certificate and route and corridor permit are approved, a number of landowners may choose not to negotiate with Keystone. Once the route and corridor has been approved, the only remaining issue to be resolved in voluntary easement acquisition is reasonable compensation to the landowners. Thus, an issuance of route and corridor permit should help to maximize voluntary easement acquisition.
And
that's the language.
The part that concerned me about that is the purpose of the siting process is not to maximize voluntary easement acquisition. I mean, it's a separate process.
Right.
It is a process that's there to protect environmental, cultural, historical resources of the state, not to aid this separate process of getting in acquiring easements. And it probably, I think, I and perhaps the commission have a special sensitivity to this because what we've heard from a number of landowners is we'd like to negotiate, but we're not having anyone negotiate with us from Keystone. The word that we've been getting in some instances, at least allegedly, is that it's kind of a take it or leave it thing. So to kind of insert this as a response to the commission needing more time, I was not.
The commission did receive the response letter from Keystone. Remember, we had asked 2 weeks ago for Keystone to comment on its relationships and its dealings with customers. The commission has received the response of Keystone to that request. We have received that letter, and that is in our public files at this time.
How satisfactory do you think it is?
They addressed the dealings with the two people who the commission had particularly noted that we had received emails from.
Are you satisfied with it?
I was satisfied with their response to what they had said they were doing with those two individuals.
How about you, Tony? You satisfied with it?
Well, I think that, you know, it we haven't had an opportunity to follow up with Keystone, and I guess I'll reserve judgment until we've had that opportunity, and whether it's in just a
Kevin, did you like it?
Dale, what I would say is the response from Keystone was fine as far as it goes, but what I'm more interested in is the response by Keystone that is reflected by the landowner. In other words, did they carry through what they said they were doing, and is the landowner reasonably satisfied with how they've been dealt with, and that we have not had an opportunity follow up on yet. I might also just state this context that it is somewhat ironic that if landowners or even we are feeling somewhat manipulated or pulled into shortening this time frame or make this time frame for issuing the permit as short as Keystone would like it, when at the same time any involuntary easement acquisition would extend this far beyond spring of next year, perhaps as much as a couple of years. So, some of this, I suppose, is positioning and whatnot, but as far as the commission is concerned, we have a very specific task in front of us, responsibility for lots of people, and we just need to take the time that we need to take to not only do it, but to do it well, do it right, do it to the satisfaction of as many people as we can.
Could someone explain why would it be in the landowner's interest to wait until the commission makes its determination?
Well, Dale, here's what I would think about that. I don't know that a landowner may be looking appropriately to the Public Service Commission, who are the experts in citing and wanting to make sure that we're satisfied. That's not unreasonable to me to expect that a landowner would make me comfortable or uncertain or have a varying degree of comfort and wait for the experts to rule before they say,
they may also think that there may be some possibility that the commission could change the route. I mean, that's always an option. Maybe they're waiting to see what exactly the route is that the commission approves before they sign their easement.
Well, see, that's okay, if I'm a landowner and the company thinks it's putting the pipeline through my land, and then they change the route so that the pipeline isn't on my land, I would think it would be more interesting if I sold the company an easement that they weren't going to use. And that's why I'm a little unclear as to why waiting up until the time the permit is granted makes any sense. I mean, I'd rather sell the company. I'd rather take the company's money and have them not use my land. And if there's that possibility, I guess that's what I'm.
Scenarios or possibilities, but at the same time, know, we need to be a little bit careful to avoid doing what we could end up doing, and that is mixing these two processes. Landowner easements is really a completely separate process, or whatever any individual or group of landowners might be thinking about the relationship is, you know, will have to be clarified by them. We're just kind of hypothetically exposing it.
Just so that I'm clear, is it the commission's position that you have as long as you think you need to decide this matter, as long as you have just cause?
I think that's what the statute says. But
it certainly does, but I would also say, Dale, the implication would be that, in my mind anyway, the longer the timeline would become in our minds, the more specific and relevant the just cause probably ought to be. Certainly,
the
statute doesn't define all of that. It says
that
with just cause, we can extend the timeline.
How long do folks have to bring in new information? How long do folks have to bring in new information? This process has been going on for months.
Right.
How long do they have?
Well, Dale, first of all, I suppose that you can't keep anybody from providing information as long as the case hasn't been decided. At the same time, we do have a discussion on our admin portion of our meeting relating specifically to late filed information, how we deal with it. Judge Wall's response to our inquiry of him on that will be discussed at the admin meeting, so I suppose some of those questions will be clarified then. I would say this, that I find it frustrating that some entities that ought to know better come in at the last minute with information and allegations and trying to influence this process so late when they really should know better. But at the same time, I don't think we can't penalize citizens because public officials who should have known better were so late in doing that job. So that's part of why I think this delay is important as well.
Which entities are you talking about?
I'm speaking at this point specifically about the city of Fargo.
Well, that reminds me. Did you reference a motion from the Fargo city attorney?
We didn't reference. I might have referenced it in my comments. We did receive that motion yesterday, and that's why I hope that in the scheduling portion of the meeting we can schedule the work session as soon as possible so we can discuss that motion.
What is the nature of the motion, Kevin?
The nature of the motion is they're requesting that we reopen the hearing for both the TCNN as well as the route permit and corridor.
I think there's a late intervention, too.
There's a late intervention.
Right.
Right. We have a 12-page document that from the city of Fargo.
And the reason, commission and beyond received. That, in all honesty, Dave, it's hard to discuss it because we just received that, and that's why when we get to the scheduling portion for a work session, I would certainly recommend that we include that motion in our work session.
Would it be possible to get a copy of the 12-page document that Commissioner Weefall just referenced?
Yes.
And also the Keystone letter?
Sure.
Yes.
The $1,500 fine for Dakota Westmoreland, could...
That's proposed.
Yes.
That's proposed.
Yes. Can you tell me again, what was that for? Yeah.
Well, what it's for is because it was noticed in a inspection in September that a haul road had been built and was actually being utilized prior to the approval of the plans for that haul road. Even though there had been some discussion and whatnot beforehand, but the design had been approved, and so that is a violation. If I remember right, at this point I'm driving, so somebody else can pull out probably the language, but 1,250 of the proposed fine was based, I believe, on negligence, and the other 250 on the potential seriousness of that violation. And the seriousness relates to the ability for water to run off appropriately.
Just so that I'm clear, while you're talking now, you're driving down the highway?
I confess that I am.
Okay. The...
Fargo.
Were there that makes it better. Were there any sort of environmental or other impacts notice because of this road that would have been headed off if it had been delayed until there was some kind of plan approved?
I guess I'm not sure of the question, but you're certainly
well, what's,
I can relate to that. The discussion in that we have in our paperwork says, during a routine inspection of the Beulah Mine on September 6, 2007, a Reclamation Division inspector noted that a new section of Primary Haul Road had been constructed in a previously undisturbed area that did not drain to the pit or to a sedimentation pond. Although much of the road drained to the active North Red Pit, the outside slope of a fill section did not drain to the pit or a sedimentation pond. Sedimentation ponds are where, you know, if you have a heavy rain, sediment can collect. Design plans for the road had not been approved for this segment of Hall Road as required by North Dakota law. During the September 6th inspection, the coal haulers were observed using the road to transport coal from the North Red Pit. So that is the discussion as we have it. And of course, the this is an opportunity now for, we're assessing a proposed penalty and an informal conference so that this will be discussed more fully at that time, and then we'll get a recommendation from the administrative law judge that the commission will act upon. And then if the company is not satisfied, it still has a chance to come before the full commission and argue about this. So this is very preliminary. All we're doing here is setting a proposed fine and setting up an informal conference on this particular matter.
Can the company still use the road while this matter is pending?
Yes.
I was wanting to ask a few things about the wind farm.
Yes.
Now, because, I mean, do you have jurisdiction? Is this?
Yes, we do.
Why?
We have jurisdiction because this is an addition to a 160-megawatt wind farm, and the commission has jurisdiction and siting over any wind farm 100 megawatts and larger.
I was just wondering, did they try to, was there ever a contention made that this is a new wind farm?
No. No.
Okay. And if I understood correctly, it's 27 turbines. Excuse me.
Let's see, we have that fact sheet for you. 40 megawatts, Minn Kota Power. Minn Kota will purchase the additional power. That is not on your fact sheet, but we were able to verify that today for you.
I don't have a fact sheet.
All right, there was one. There were six or seven right on the table. So there should be another one unless they've all been picked up today.
They've all been stolen, huh?
Okay. And then it shows on the reverse side the map, and you can see that some of the turbines are going to be in area that's previously been sited, and some are going to be on new, except that this map is not in color. And so I do have a color map right here, all right?
Okay.
So the yellow area represents areas that will be new siting. And the gray area represents the area of the existing wind farm, so that you can see that there is not a lot of new land that's going to be added. A number of the turbines are going to be placed on land that has been sited already. However, since they're adding new turbines, that's also important that the commission take a look at that.
What's the filing fee, please?
$36,500.
And what's the waiting period shortened to?
It's shortened to 1 day.
And if I understand correctly, the whole process of siting the expansion of the wind farm, is it the same as if it was just a
yes.
new wind farm?
Yes.
You're just starting from scratch?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that the fact that there's already a wind farm at the or in the proximity of the location, will that speed things up any?
It certainly will. The commission has a familiarity with the existing wind farm, and we're familiar with the area that's being proposed, so it may help the commission.
Although we're not going to be cavalier about it.
that
was for
Dave Thompson. That was very good.
Thank you. That was for Dave Thompson.
That was better than Dave could do.
Oh,
you have a can-do attitude about it.
Dave can do
that. The issue does raise a kind of an interesting public policy issue that, you know, that for legislators to discuss later, perhaps not us, and that is, you know, how do you deal with a large footprint? You know, our statutes, again, are built around the old model of a large coal-fired power plant with a very specific footprint. And the question I always have is, are we talking about one generating facility, or are we talking about 27 generating facilities? And all of those questions, I suspect the Unit Committee will wrestle with a little bit. But it's very intriguing to me and thought-provoking.
That is, Alana and I just had this conversation a few days ago, but I think it may make sense at some point for us to look at perhaps some very basic siting rules as it relates to wind, so that folks know how we're going to process it, the rules of the road. Because honestly, I mean, the statutes were not written contemplating wind farms, and we've managed to get by, and I think we've done a good job of siting, but just looking ahead at what's coming, I think maybe it makes some sense to have that conversation.
Just so that I'm clear, that the power is being sold to Minn Kota?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm sorry that I was a bit late. The Northern States Power Company electric rates, when I came in, you were speaking about an issue that was raised in the early 90s.
Right, it was. There's two issues that were raised in the order from the early 90s, and the commission is putting those out now for public comment. NSP has asked us, because they're planning to file another rate case in the near future. They're asking us to consider not using those requirements that were in the 93 order, and I'll be glad to give you a copy of what those are. Okay, any further questions?
It's the fact that Specialty Export has its license, even though it's insolvent. Do you need a law change, or do you think this is a...
Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about this, actually, since this came up. And I don't know that it's so much in and of the fact that they have the license. What cropped up was that we, you know, here was a facility in a community that probably wants a business to come in and operate sooner rather than later, but because there is this pending insolvency, which isn't related to the facility itself, it's the company behind it, we had a little bit of kind of trouble with the mechanics of getting it taken care of, because if we move to remove the license ourselves, that's a commission action that requires certain notice requirements, number of days, they have an opportunity to respond. It could be a months-long process to relinquish the license. Now, we were fortunate here in that Specialty Export on its own came forward and relinquish the license, but I think that probably is something that needs to be looked at. I mean, we've already got independent authority to issue a cease and desist order, which is there to protect the public, so I think we've got the tools in our toolbox to protect the public in insolvencies. It's really a question of, if you've got this facility out there and it happens to be licensed and happens to be under an insolvency, how can we get it turned over to a new owner as soon as possible,
if Specialty Export, for example, wanted to hang on to its license, what could you do about it?
Well, what we'd have to do, staff could issue I don't know if it'd be a show cause proceeding, but we'd basically force them into relinquishing the license. But when the commission takes an action like that, there are standards of law and due process that we have to follow that would extend that time frame out. So, anything that we would do with regard to that would need some sort of statutory change.
Is it fair to say that if a company was determined to hang on to its license, it could be a fairly
protracted
process and it would delay the coming in of another operator?
Absolutely. If they wanted to exhaust every legal remedy, they could drag out the process for quite a number of months.
All right. I believe there's a question over here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Johnson. I'm the city attorney for Fargo. Relative to the deadline that was extended to December 12th, we did file a motion for permission to appear as a party in the Keystone Pipeline issue, and then also to reopen the record. I know that on the agenda is an administrative item coming up. You may be talking about this, but in the event you don't, I was just curious if the commission could give some sense as to there will be a 10-day time period for a response from the parties that are appearing to respond to our motions. Then a decision would be made, but I'm just curious how, if we were allowed to open or to appear as a party and then to reopen, how that would affect the deadline.
I think that if you'll just wait a few minutes, we'll be discussing that at our admin meeting. I think that'd be the appropriate place.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. The commission will now adjourn for 5 minutes to sign paperwork, and that will bring us then to 11:05. Then we will gather again for our admin portion. And just a minute, I need to talk to Commissioner Kramer. Are you going to be on the phone for our admin meeting, Commissioner Kramer?
Yes, I will be.
Okay, thank you. So.
Do you want us to call you back?
Or you didn't hit somebody.
You know, why don't you just call me back? That's fine. I'm yeah, that'd be great.
All right, thank you.
Absolutely.